Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 86 for December 5th, 2008. Windows Live Wave 3. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/windows. And by GoToMeeting, online meetings made easy. For a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting for your PC or Mac, visit GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. Leo Laporte, the tech guy here. He's Paul Thurrott, the Windows guy, the Mr. Microsoft. Actually, if you say that, it sounds like Mr. Microphone. Mr. Microsoft, Paul Thurrott is here.
It's not complimentary, no matter how you should.
It isn't, is it? Especially, do you ever think, I mean, we live with Microsoft so much, the name Microsoft, that we don't really, but that's actually a really crappy name for a company.
Yeah.
It's small it's soft.
It's small and it's exactly what you're looking for. I often write Microsoft by mistake when I mean to write something else because I type it so often.
Yeah.
It's like when you're driving somewhere and you're sort of on autopilot and then you're halfway there and you realize, why am I driving this way? I'm going somewhere else, you know, but you just sort of do that.
I do that all the time. I drive the kids to school. No matter where I'm going, I end up going to the kids' school.
I do this. I don't leave the house much unless I'm traveling.
Right.
You know, so I go to the gym a couple of times a week and occasionally I'll be in the car with my wife and she'll say, where are you driving?
The gym.
The gym? Why are we not going to the gym?
You and I are a lot alike. It just shows that we're basically on automatic most of the time.
We're not very good people.
No, we're not. We're terrible people.
That's what I'm saying.
As our wives will be quick to tell us at any time. Yeah. But we do love to get together once a week and talk about Microsoft Windows, Zune, Xbox 360. Can I tell you, by the way, before we get to our show?
Sure.
How much I hate the Xbox 360 update. You were right. So,
hey, listen. I just noticed today there are new ski and snow clothing available for the avatars. So, if you haven't spent enough time,
you know what? I guess once you set it up, it's probably fine. You know, it's just
no, it's not fine. No, and I'll tell you why it's not fine. That little goober guy stands there, and he's always
moving.
He does stuff.
He's always like, doing
it. If you don't get rid of him, if you don't go do something, he'll dance and he
go
gets...
Go away!
Jeez.
You're haunted! But
seriously, all they have to do to fix this is hide the avatar.
Yeah. Don't you understand? We're here to game.
Oh, boy.
We came to game, Microsoft. Get out of the way.
And since we're on this topic...
Yes.
I have to tell you,
yes.
I have an addiction right now.
Uh-oh.
And I've been playing Call of Duty...
The new one,
my son.
World at War.
Yeah, I can't stop playing this game.
Yeah,
it's a problem.
Is it? What is it that makes it more compelling, say, than Call of Duty 4?
That's a good question. I don't know because I never got into Call of Duty 4 the way I did this game, and I can't explain that. I have to go back to the second one, the first one that was out for the 360, mm-hmm. Call of Duty 2,
mm-hmm.
where I wasted that summer before we started the podcast. If I hadn't gone on vacation, I don't know that I ever would have stopped playing it.
See, it's good. This podcast is actually an intervention. Many people don't.
It is, yeah.
Don't know.
Right.
That. We're actually keeping Paul away from this game.
It's bad. It's bad.
No, it's not bad. I think that's it. But see, where my mind goes with that is, what did they do between 4 and 5 to make it more compelling? And it is hard to put your finger on it.
It's very subtle. You know, it's not the World War II era. You know, the maps are good and all that stuff. But it's not hugely better. I mean, it's better, but it's not, you know, it's not like a different game. But yeah, for whatever reason, this time around, I just love it.
There's something about games. And of course, I imagine that people like Will Wright or whoever, the brilliant game designers, must know this somehow, and whether intuitively or through study,
yeah.
But there is some
ineffable thing that makes a game, you know, addictive.
Sure.
And the great games are.
Playing this as we were talking, I would do it.
Now, and you're doing this, and you're talking about the live experience, not the, yeah, because that's really.
Well, I played the single player twice.
Really?
All the way through.
Is that compelling?
It's good. It's very good even. But I wanted to, you know, I did it on the hardest skill level to get certain achievements and so forth. But the online thing is, that's amazing. I don't know. Just, let's talk about Call of Duty for the next hour, shall we?
We could do a new show.
Call of Duty Weekly.
Paul. Paul calls.
Anyway.
No, I you know, and the truth is I kind of stay away from this stuff because I fear my addiction. And I know, just like you, that I have several, I have in my life probably several years lost to games.
Easily.
Yeah. So, but I don't know if that's such a bad thing.
I hope not.
Paul, you haven't shaved in about 4 days. I just want to...
Listen, I ate turkey on Thanksgiving Day,
yeah,
and then I played video games for the rest of the long weekend.
Wow. But that's what people do. Yeah. It's that or watch football. So instead of watching football, you play Call of Duty. I think in a way that's better. You're more engaged. You're actually socializing.
Well, it helps that the Patriots are terrible this year.
But yes. If the Pats had a chance,
maybe I would move the TV into my office
so you could play Call. That's what's wrong. You have Call of Duty in your office. That's what's wrong. Stop
that. I
can't
take it. It's not leaving.
Oh man, you're really so. To get back to the new Xbox 360,
yes.
I think you kind of panned it, and I wasn't crazy about the Weebles, but I like
it aside from the Weebles.
Well, that's the thing, but the problem is the Weebles get in the way because you install it, and the first thing you have to do is customize your Weeble.
Yes,
I don't want to customize my Weeble. I want to play a game, or I want to watch. I mean, I love the Netflix. I love the fact that it's becoming better.
Hidden Gotcha on the Netflix thing. I'm not sure if we discussed this.
A friend of mine called me the other day.
What's that?
You have to be an Xbox Gold Live Gold member.
Well, so a friend called. He said, "Hey, I might actually be getting an Xbox 360." And I said, "Really? Why?" And he said, "Well, now they have Netflix on there."
Yeah.
I said, "Well, hold on a second." I said, "You realize you have to pay for an Xbox Live Gold subscription every year to access that feature, right?" And he said, "You got to be kidding me." I said, "No." I said, "Just get that $99." Roku box and you'll
be good to
go.
Pay that once and you're already paying your Netflix fee.
But Roku thing's nice because it's $99 up front and then you're done.
And that's it.
And it works wonderfully well. It works exactly the same as the Xbox 360 software does. The Xbox 360 version, the Netflix thing is positioned as a perk for the people who are already paying for gold subscriptions. But if you're not already paying for that, it's just an additional thing to pay for.
How much does a gold subscription cost?
I think it's $50 to $70 a year, somewhere in there.
So it's not awful.
Well, it's not awful, but
nowadays,
it's $70 additional a year. If you're not playing online games,
right?
You know, that's, you know, there's no reason to add that to the
and
cost.
And you can't play Xbox Live unless... No, you could play on Silver,
well, what you,
right?
Yeah, I don't even remember anymore what the details are. I believe you can. I think the gold subscription adds things like...
enhanced gamer feedback, it says.
Yes, well, it does more intelligent matching of you against people with similar skills.
Revolutionary true skill matchmaking. So, I don't have a gold membership, I guess. I have a silver membership, but we play Xbox Live.
Yeah.
And so I tried to start the Netflix, and it said you need gold. So I got to buy them.
I was hoping to see it would have some additional functionality. I mean, this thing is sort of a computer, right? So maybe you could manage your queue from this machine. How nice would that be?
Right.
You know, because one of the limitations of the Roku device is that you can't sit in front of your TV with your remote control and actually select content that you want to play. You have to go back to your computer and put them into an instant queue. And once they're in your instant queue, then they become available on the device. But if there's something that's on the service that's not in your instant queue,
right,
you literally have to go to a web browser, browse to it, and add it to the queue. It's kind of a herky-jerky. I don't even know why they do it that way. It's very strange. But right. You know, I'm thinking the Xbox 360, it's pretty powerful. Maybe they'll figure out a way to add that capability right to the software, but
it would be nice. Yeah. And I guess, you know, look, this is early days. They're just now kind of making this partnership. That's presumably it's certainly Netflix interest that you be able to manage your Netflix account from the Xbox. I mean, ideally you shouldn't have to leave the Xbox to do any of it.
Leo, ideally you should never leave the Xbox ever.
And ideally you shouldn't have to leave Call of Duty 4 or 5. You should be, you know, chasing German soldiers, and then you go into a house and there's your Netflix right. player, and you say, hey, Achtung, I'd like to watch a movie. I'll be back. And you just watch the movie, and then you go out and you shoot some more.
Well, you can set some traps in the doorway, so if someone comes and gets you, they get blown up.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
You might never have to have a life at all.
At least not a real one.
But, you know, we're being frivolous here, but seriously, think about this. Now, yeah, mm-hmm. Gaming, when you and I were young men, well, you were younger than I, but even in your youth, gaming was not immersive. You know, I mean, I remember the first games I saw that was Pong and Pac-Man. What was your first gaming experience? Was it Atari? Was it
By the time we decided Nintendo? To get a, we got a Mattel Intellivision.
You had an Intellivision, because
because at the time that was the best one, supposedly.
And that was little blocky stick figures. You're playing Pitfall. Yeah. It's a guy with a block of a head and a block of a body holding onto a rope that.
By the way, there are still some games on that system that hold up today. I mean, there are some really, truly excellent games that were created.
Sure,
today.
It's what we were talking about. There's this ineffable thing that makes a game great. It has nothing to do with. The graphics.
No, my brother and I still talk about, you know, the game was so blocky. The football game was sort of a scroller. It would go across the screen, and the ball was the same color as the lines on the field.
Right.
So if you position your player just right, you could throw the ball, and it would go over the line. You wouldn't see it. So it was like the secret play.
That's clever.
Yeah.
That's really clever.
Then the guy would run down the field and score the touchdown, and it had that white noise crowd cheering sound. You know.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Ah, memories. But there's the point. So, since that time, look how far we've come in realism and immersibility. When your kid is your age, he could put a helmet on and live 24/7 in that world, and it will be very hyper real, right?
Yeah,
I think we're headed that way.
Yeah. Oh, I often think of the things that he has available to
him.
At such an early age, you know, how crazy it is compared to what I have.
Yeah. So I'm figuring by the time I get in the nursing home, I'll have a helmet I could put on. I'll be in a cafe in Paris. I'll be in a bed with, you know, wires attached to me, but I'll think I'm in Paris.
There you go.
And I'll be happy.
Where I would be.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe you and I will meet there.
Of course, by the time we're that age, there won't be any more cafes in Paris.
Doesn't matter. That's the point. The whole world could go to hell, but we could be at a cafe in Paris circa 1992.
There you go.
They'll still have accordions. Edith Piaf will still
be there. Let's sit here and think about that one for a moment.
All right. Anyway, get rid of the Weebles, Microsoft. We just want to play our games, okay?
Yeah.
Windows 7 beta. This is the public beta?
Yes, it is.
January?
Mm-hmm.
That's next month.
It is.
I'm so excited.
The more I see of this thing, the more I come to the same conclusion, which is this operating system is so far along and is so much closer to release than so many people realize. I think that people are just going to be shocked when it just comes out one day.
That's the way to do it. Instead of saying 5 years early, well, any day now.
I keep looking for something. You know, there's got to be some big secret something. Something. Nope. Here it is. Done. You know, it's just done.
Right. No, I think
me talking like that, by the way. Every time I say something like this, I get a couple of emails from people.
It's not done. It's not done. Don't tell them it's done. It's
not, why do you keep saying it's done? It's not done.
But that's their strategy. See how it's different?
Yeah.
They really are. I think this is so much smarter.
Mm.
It's going to pop out. And people will be thrilled and excited. There'll be a buzz. People will, you know, what does Microsoft want? Wouldn't they love it to have the lines out the door at the store the day Windows 7 comes out? Isn't that the best kind of advertising?
It is. I don't know that we're going to see that, but yeah, that would be nice.
I guess we won't, because people don't buy operating systems.
This is like the reduced expectations that come with aging, right? You know, I think at this point what they'd be happy with is fewer complaints. You know, that kind of thing. You know, fewer people online saying that their next operating system is terrible. That would be great.
Okay. I think they'll go. I think they'll go a little farther than that. I
think
excited.
So too. Yeah. I think the momentum is there, and I think that the excitement is there. By and large.
When they say public beta, will we see basically what you got at PDC? Do you know?
No, this will be newer. So the version we got at PDC was that Milestone 3 build, a pre-beta, not feature complete. But the beta build that we're going to see in January will be feature complete. That means it's pretty much there. Wow. Obviously, they can fine-tune things and so forth. But no major new features after that. So what you see in January is pretty much what you're going to get. But it also suggests, again, that they're not going to wait another year to ship that thing, right? You can't ship a feature complete version of a product and then hold off for a long amount of time, And I found it, I think we discussed this on the podcast before, but I found it really interesting that they very specifically said beta, not betas, and release candidate, and then the final release. They're not talking about a lot of releases here. They're talking about a beta and then a release candidate, and then we're done. Wow.
You think they're that close to really being ready?
Yeah.
Wow.
Really do.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Wow. That's amazing.
It is amazing. But yeah, there you go.
And I love it, Paul.
What? I can't see you. So I
just love, it's like,
I feel like I'm in the dark.
There you go.
There you go.
Yep. You're such an Eeyore.
I'm sorry. Wow.
It'll be
out. I've been told that before, and
it'll be out.
It stopped bothering me a while ago, but it does make me pause.
Did that sting? I'm sorry. I didn't mean
it doesn't sting anymore. It's comforting.
It'll be out. It's okay. There it goes. But in a way, in this business, if you expect the worst, you're seldom disappointed, and B, when things work out well, you're happy.
This is my entire life in a nutshell right there.
You learned. I learned that from John C. Dvorak. It's all terrible.
To him today, and I do take exception to that. I'm not as cranky as he is.
Oh, no.
I'm not even, cranky. I'm more...
No, you're not cranky. You're
bored.
Bored is not quite right. You've been there, done that. John has a little bit of that going on.
Well, he is the master of that. Yeah. Really.
I don't know how I'd characterize it, but I'm sure we'll receive lots of emails from our listeners.
Yeah, I'm sure people will be racing to fill in the blanks on that one.
In three words or less, how would you describe?
How has Paul Thurrott screwed over your life?
No. We say it with love. Look, if you want to succeed in this business, you have to have a very identifiable persona that, you have to be caricaturable.
I see.
And in a way that's a disadvantage. If you're a Vanna White, and even she has some characteristics.
Are you suggesting that I am not a Vanna White?
You're far from a Vanna White, my friend.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, lots of new stuff in the live sphere. And you have a great article on Windows Live Gaming I want to talk about. Also, I want to ask you about this rumor going around on Service Pack 2 for Vista and what that's all about. Before we do, though, I want to mention GoToMeeting, our good friends at GoToMeeting. They do a product that has transformed, I think, business. There are other, I'll acknowledge it, I'll admit it, there are other online meeting services out there. But there is nothing like GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is the king of online meeting services. That's why they keep winning awards as the best in breed. Here's the deal. You can do this from a PC or a Mac. Works best on Windows. I say that just because it's Windows Weekly. It works fine on a Mac.
I was going to say, I almost laughed out loud.
It works fine on a Mac. But what doesn't, after all?
Yeah.
Here's the deal. You set up a meeting. You can do it ahead of time, or you could, like Paul and I are, let's say we're on a conference call, and Paul could say, hey, I really want to show you what I mean when I'm talking, what I'm talking about here. And, here, go to meeting.com. I'll go, okay, well, go to meeting.com. Here's a meeting ID, 13709. Okay, 13709. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing his screen, 3,000 miles away. I'm seeing his screen, and I'm seeing the mouse move. I'm seeing him go through PowerPoint or show me, anything. You could say, here, I want to show you this great technique in Call of Duty and do that. It's amazing. Now, here's the deal. I want to give you a chance to try it free for the next 30 days. A month of online meetings, absolutely free. Go to gotomeeting.com/Windows Weekly. gotomeeting.com/Windows Weekly. And you could try this free. It's set up as a couple of minutes. There's no install on the other side. So that's important. Your clients, you know, don't want to jump through hoops for a sales presentation. It has to be easy for them. But I got to tell you, it is so much better than a conference call. You said you just used GoToMeeting today.
Just today.
What were you doing with it?
I had a meeting with a company that does remote management of Exchange.
So here's... Oh, yeah, I'm using it. By the way, we'll talk about that in a bit. I just set up a hosted Exchange. I'm so excited. But that's a perfect example. So they want to show you what they're doing. It can't be hard for you. You're doing them a favor by taking the briefing. GoToMeeting makes it very easy. And, you know, at that point, you also feel like you're taken care of. Like, they're giving me the information I need. It's not just talking to me and saying, well, now, Ken, now put your mouse over here. You can really see it. Great for collaboration. Great for training. Very easy to use. By the way, very affordable, too. You get unlimited use for one low flat rate every month. It's very, you know, I mean, this is it. Try it free for 30 days. GoToMeeting.com/Windows Weekly. You don't have to say this if you don't mean it, it's been my experience that when somebody's doing a meeting, if they have something to look at, it's so much more interesting.
Sure. Frankly. I mean, actually, you know, Microsoft has, they don't use GoToMeeting specifically.
They have their own, they use their own stuff. Yeah.
But they have turned to this sort of solution a lot this year, such that, I mean, I haven't traveled as much as I have in the past.
And don't you love that?
Yeah, people from Microsoft haven't had to come here physically as often as they have in the past.
It saves money and saves time, yeah. I think that's what you're going to see from now on is people using this kind of stuff. And I would suggest GoToMeeting be the one you want to use. So, all right, let's see. Let's save the live stuff and do it all together. Service Pack 2, as long as we're talking about. But somebody sent me an email saying, why is Microsoft doing Service Pack 2 for Vista when they're going to be shipping Windows 7 any minute now?
Well, actually, if you want to know the answer to that question, just do a fresh install of Windows Vista with Service Pack 1 and see how many updates there are to install.
Oh. I mean, so it's just rolling up the updates.
It's not just that, but that's most of what it is. You know, they're not adding any big new features per se. I think that some of the things that are interesting about the Service Pack are that, one, just to remind people, Service Pack 2 is the same for Windows Vista as it is for Windows Server 2008. It's the same Service Pack. You install the same exact file on both operating systems. Slightly different functionality depending on which system you install it on. So, for example, on Windows Vista, they're including Windows Search 4.0, which used to be a separate update, and some other features. Whereas on the server, they're enabling things like the final version of Hyper-V, whereas in the initial version of Windows Server, you got a pre-release version of Hyper-V. So mostly it's just, a roll-up of previously released hot fixes and so forth.
Kind of in the tradition of service packs, in
very
general,
much so.
Except for
very
Service Pack 2 XP.
Yeah, so there's a beta out now. You can actually get it as of Friday, I think. It will be publicly available.
Oh.
I'm not sure how the public beta is going to go. The version I got was actually already integrated with the operating system. So I'm not sure if they're shipping a file that you install or the full OS. I assume it's going to be the file you install.
It's got to be the file. They're not going to give people Vista.
Yeah, and then the final release probably around April.
My experience, and you could tell me what yours has been. My experience is you really, unless it's somebody like Paul Thurrott, you know, where you need to cover it, you don't want to do these betas of service packs.
Yeah.
Don't run out and do it.
Advantage to it, right? You're not going to get anything out of it. So, for example, Windows Search 4.0 is an optional install. You can grab that yourself. If you're keeping your system up to date, you're pretty much there. I mean, this is mostly for businesses, to be honest, because obviously as they roll out the system, they want to do so in the cleanest possible way. So, Service Pack 2 in this case gives them something that's more up to date with all the updates and so forth than previous versions, so it'll be quicker to install and so forth.
Right.
There's setup and deployment tools in there. There's a new Service Pack cleanup tool, but these things are all aimed at businesses. So if you're just a regular user, I wouldn't get too excited about it.
And, you know, I just remember with Service Pack 2 on XP that people who installed it really regretted it in the beta because they had to uninstall it before they could install the real one. And just, it's just a mess. It's best if you can avoid it.
I mean, if there was something in there where I could point to it and say, oh, look, this is the only way you can get this and it's really interesting, go for it. But I mean, on both the client and the server, you know, it's not really that hugely important as far as the functionality that you would actually see. I mean, you install the thing, it's Vista, you know, nothing has changed from a visual standpoint. So,
yeah, very cool. Let's talk about Live. There's a lot to say about Live.
Yeah. So they finally started shipping the services, the Wave 3 services. And let me see if I can find the exact list, because it's not everything, but it is a pretty significant list of stuff. So let's see. It looks like six or seven services have shipped in the new Wave 3 version. So Windows Live Home, which is their portal page, which is dramatically better. You know, the old Windows Live Home, which is home.live.com, pretty sparse looking, not a lot going on there. But now it aggregates all of the content that you want exposed about yourself as well as all of the content that your own contacts have exposed into this page. And you can obviously modify it however you want. And it's actually a pretty decent homepage now, I'd say, for the first time, sort of akin to something like iGoogle maybe, or you know, Yahoo's page if you do that kind of customization. But behind the scenes, there's something called Windows Live Profile, which is also new. And this is where you determine what information gets broadcast about you out to your network of friends. And you establish permissions and so forth for different groups of individuals. So if somebody hits your profile that you don't know, maybe they see nothing. But if they're in your network of contacts, maybe they see more information. But I think the thing that's really exciting there is that they're allowing you to hook into third-party services. Microsoft has signed up with over 50 third-party services. There's places like, you know, Yelp and Facebook, Twitter, and all these other places. And you basically just link that stuff to your Live account, and then that goes out on your own personal feed.
Oh, so, that's live streaming.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is.
They're in business, huh? That's interesting. Now, is that RSS-based? Do you know?
I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised to discover that. It must be.
It must be. I would hope it'd be standards-based because, you know what, this is a chance for them to kind of move into this space big time.
Well, I think this is interesting because it's almost an affirmation that they can't compete with the Facebooks of the world, right? In other words, Microsoft could come up with their own little Facebook-type service, and maybe it would gain a certain amount of traction, and I guess they could do that. Or they could just acknowledge that people have these accounts all over the place, you know, at photo services, at blog services, at social networking services, and that these things are sort of hard to manage. And if they have a central place where they can manage them all from one place and then put that information out in one place, that's actually really valuable. And I know that's valuable because I had to, on the super site, create a page of all the different things that I publish information through. And here's a link to the RSS feed, and here's a link to the web page. And it's this awful, ugly list of stuff because my stuff is all over the place. You know, and I think it's Friend Feed is something that aggregates content, if I have that right, or I always confuse Friendster, Friend Feed, whatever it is. You know, you can aggregate certain things through there.
Friend Feed's an aggregator. So I use that like crazy. I love Friend Feed.
Yeah, and that's good, I think, for technical people, right? But obviously, the Windows Live stuff is designed for consumers and for average people. And, you know, some of the services are more aimed at the types of things normal people would do. I hate to say it like that, but, you know.
No, I agree with you. And that's one of the disadvantages of things like Twitter, FriendFeed, Jaiku.
Yeah.
It's the geek community, and I would love it.
Yes.
But
yes,
there's some real power to it. And
there
those of us who've used it are starting to realize this power. I think people are looking at Twitter. You see CNN talking about it like crazy. It was just in the Wall Street Journal.
But there's, you know, there's a level of complexity there.
Yes.
Right? Because Twitter, you know, if you just look at Twitter itself, it's a web page.
Right.
And, you know, I asked this on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. I said, does anyone actually use the Twitter website?
No.
You know, to access Twitter, really?
Right.
And I guess some people do, but most people don't.
Right.
But there's almost this journey of discovery you have to go through.
Exactly.
So you hit the Twitter web page and you say, okay, well, this kind of works, but, you know, is there any other better way to do this? And then if you ask around, which of course is the right thing to do on Twitter anyway, people will recommend applications to you. I happen to use Twirl. I use Twitter on the iPhone.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And you sort of fall into, you try different things, you fall back and use, you know, you find the one thing that you like and then you're there. But everything I just described, that was months for me, you know. I had someone talk about handholding. You know, it's very early on in my Twitter experience, somebody wrote me and said, you know, this thing is a two-way conversation and it only works if you're following other people as well. And yeah, okay. You know, at the time that was a little bit of a revelation to me.
Right.
Now I follow a lot of people.
Right.
Because that's how it works, right? I mean, but again, everything we just described, that there's a whole learning process involved. So I think the Windows Live stuff is really interesting because I think people dabble in things a little bit. Maybe they get a little bit overwhelmed. And then I think ultimately we're all part of so many different things online. It just gets confusing. So providing a central place for that stuff where you can point people to and say, hey, look, this is everything I do. You know, the thing that is me online, you know, my online persona, whatever, here it is, one place, you know.
That's what everybody's begging for. And everybody's saying, yeah. You know, where do we go online? I mean, is it your blog that you, if somebody says, okay, how do I know about Paul Thurrott? Where do you go?
Sure. This stuff is really confusing. You know, there's a, the website that I have is static and we're moving to some content management system soon, but there are no comments on my articles. There's commenting in the blog because we use community server. It's a different system, but Google has a service that's in beta right now where you can actually add Google like a commenting system to any website. So I could actually add this control to every one of my pages if I wanted to. And that's interesting, you know, but again, these are all different solutions that are just sort of separate and they're out there and you have to know that they're out there and you have to find them and manage them all separately and everything. So I'm sort of hoping that the Microsoft stuff comes together because it would be nice to have this one thing going on. And how nice would it be to have people be able to hit your website and log on with, you know, whatever system they prefer, if they Windows Live ID or maybe they're a Google guy or maybe they're a Yahoo person, whatever it is, and then be able to access things securely, but it's something we as website owners don't have to deal with, you know.
Right.
You share information, photos, whatever.
So is this all up and running now? I mean, can I try
that?
Yeah,
this stuff is all up and running. There's some other things. There's a group service.
It's Windows only, though, isn't it?
No, this is on the web.
So I should. So okay, good. Because I have, of course, I use Live on the Mac. So all of these features are.
These are all in the Sky. So SkyDrive now, 25 gigs of storage on there.
Yay! You're kidding. Yeah. That's fantastic.
And by the way, 25 gigs and automatically will go up as you need it. As long as you're not abusing the service, if you're actually storing photos on there and, you know, you're not transmitting, you know, 2 gigabyte video, you know, rips of DVDs or whatever.
Right.
They'll keep upgrading your service, your storage.
Oh, I have to say, I imagine that this is what everybody else in the business has been afraid of.
Yes, they actually, it's like they got it all of a sudden.
Yeah, and Microsoft launches into it, and suddenly, sure. You know, this is the 800-pound gorilla saying, yeah, we could do that.
Yeah.
And they've done before. I mean, that's what happened with Netscape and Internet Explorer.
Yep. Yeah, and I think the only downside here is that there's so much going on, it's just kind of confusing. You know?
Yeah, so what do you suggest? I'm on the front page, which is home.live.com.
Yeah. So you see some sort of default view, probably. I don't know how many contacts you have through
Windows
Live.
Well, the first thing I see, it says people you might know. So I could add people.
You can add people, yeah. So, I mean, I've been using, because I've been using Windows Live Messenger and Windows Live Hotmail, although I don't use Hotmail as my primary email, but I still have a Hotmail account. I actually have a bunch of contacts. So when I log into this thing, you know, there's mail right at the beginning. There's some weather stuff. You can put pictures up in the top and all that stuff. But I see this list of what's new in your network. And it's stuff like a guy named Josh has updated something on Twitter.
Right.
You know.
It's like the status feed on Facebook, kind of.
Yes.
And now, right now, it looks like I can.
It's all from a bunch of different places.
Right.
And I think that's what's interesting about
it. I can add from LinkedIn and Facebook from my contact list there. So that would be a way to quickly, if I'm on Facebook or LinkedIn, get a lot of people in. It's interesting. Those are the two they choose. I would say that's probably the best two they could choose.
Yeah, I had a friend who he complained to me just this morning, said, you know, I'm already really getting sick of these Windows Live invitations. You know, but I said, because what's happened is the service has gone live and everyone's getting really excited about it. They're sending out all these invitations to their buddies. And I said to him, you know, you need to remember this is a temporary condition and it's going to be just like user account control in Windows Vista. It's really annoying at first, but then it will calm down, you know, as time goes by. And I think that's, you know, sort of where that's it. But invite people. And then the next thing that you should do is also go into Windows Live Profile, which is that profile link at the top.
Okay.
And you want to edit your profile and connect up with the services you want. So if you're on Twitter, for example, it could be exposed through this feed as well. Or Facebook, so
and I presume that's going to be RSS feeds. They may have a Twitter API interface. Let's see. So this is cool. So welcome your Windows Live profile. What's new with Leo? I could put some notes in. I could see who I'm sharing them with.
So the bottom left, it says web activities.
Ah.
And that's where you get a list
of
stuff.
That's your live stream. Okay.
There's going to be a bunch of this stuff coming online over time.
There's
any RSS or Atom feed is okay, but then they have the specific services that they support as well.
Right. Now, I clicked Twitter and it went to Twitter, so there must be some easier way to... Twitter username. Okay.
Yeah.
Show update in the What's New list, share with everybody. Okay, so now I've added my Twitter feed. Fantastic.
Yeah. So now anyone who's in your network, so to speak, or is a contact of yours through Windows Live, either via Messenger or just Windows Live generally... we'll see this, you know, in other words, you update Twitter and their homepage, their Windows Live homepage, that will be one of the items in that What's New list because it's someone that they care about that's a contact of theirs and you've updated it.
Well, I just sent you an email.
Okay.
Please be my friend. Please be my friend. You can add Pandora, Flickr, Flickster, What's Daum? D-A-U-M. I don't know that one. Photo Bucket, StumbleUpon, TripIt, WordPress, and Yelp. I mean, there's clearly they need to add more. But this is just the first iteration.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow, this is really interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm going to add my blog so you can do any custom RSS or Atom feed. So that really means anything that has an RSS feed, you could add to this.
Be plugged right into this. Right. Yeah.
So, for instance, if I wanted to add my Netflix subscription list that's an RSS feed and so forth. Wow, this is really, really...
It is really neat. And I think for, you know, again, for normal people, right? You know, I have a homepage that I use where I literally customize the HTML and it looks exactly the way I want. But, you know, I mean, this is nice because it's automated, right? I mean, you set the stuff up once and then you're kind of good to go. And plus, the best stuff you're going to see is what your friends are doing. It's the type of thing where you could go to Facebook or you could go to Twitter. But if this is just your homepage, it's that it will just be there and it's aggregating it all, you know?
Well, and that's exactly, frankly, what FriendFeed, Facebook, all of these other places are doing. So what's interesting is to see if, because now Microsoft's doing this, if more people participate and if it's more accessible. I mean, that's your point, which is that this is not really new, but it makes it more accessible.
It's not really new, but... You know, not to beat this to death, but it is Microsoft, right?
Exactly.
And just by being Microsoft, they got to expose this to so many millions of people.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool.
And I wonder now if some of the ancillary services like Twitter will see more traffic as well, because now it essentially invites you to join Twitter if you're not already a member.
Sure.
Interesting. So now I'm going to go to my profile. Okay, so I've added a few things. And then, oh, look, I'm a busy guy. I'm a busy fella. So all of this stuff.
Just figure that out. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any way, though, that I cannot have a girl in lingerie be smiling at me on my homepage?
No, that has to be there. Sorry.
It's not me I'm worried about. It's my wife. Because she says things like, well, honey, who's that? I said, well, it's an ad. But yeah, but who is she? No, I don't know her. Is she sending you email? No, it's an ad.
Well, now, where is this?
You want the... Well, it's those ads, and they have true ads, and now I'm seeing...
You just send me this picture so I can...
I'm getting a $1,000 Victoria's Secret gift card, apparently. Free with reward offer purchases. All I have to do is click.
Click it.
I'm not going to click it. I clicked it. So, dang. So now I am going to be getting an email from her.
There you go.
This is Windows. You call this Windows Live Wave 3.
Right.
And they're here. And presumably Microsoft has a major commitment to this and is going to be doing a lot more of this.
Presumably.
You never know with them. Though.
No, they are.
They can tire.
No, there's actually a lot more going on. There's, in addition to new services that will be coming out over the next couple of months, they have the new version of the application suite, that Windows Live Essentials application suite that we talked about
right.
before. That will be out any day now in the next week or so.
Now, those would be specific to Windows users.
Those are specific. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But all this other stuff that we were just talking about works great.
Yeah, and it's not like the old days. I mean, they're not specifically making it look bad on Firefox or anything. I mean, it should work fine.
It's looking good. I'm using Firefox on a Mac,
and
it looks great. I'm impressed. Well, I guess really the first, shot in this cloud computing space.
Yeah, well, yeah, and before, I think they might have announced Windows Live as long ago as 3 years ago, but, the first version was basically just a bunch of MSN tools that they sort of...
Yeah, it was kind of the labs.
Yeah, and it just didn't feel like there was any cohesive strategy going on. It was just a bunch of stuff, and, we can release things really quickly, and look, here we are doing that, and... it wasn't until maybe a year ago that it sort of started coming together. And now you see this version, especially on the services side and the way that they interoperate across the applications and the services. And then again, with third-party services, it's really kind of amazing. Nice job. I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
There's a young lady in a tank top who's making fun of me and laughing.
I don't see these ads.
Says stop, stare, and flirt. You don't see those?
No.
Huh. Wow.
I'm looking.
My wife would see them.
Yes.
maybe. She's
actually getting a twitch right now, wherever she is.
Yeah. See, there she is again. And every time I mouse over her, she shakes her head at me. I'm not kidding. Maybe that's my imagination. She seems like she's saying something to me. So do you pay for any service? Is that why you're... Oh, look, they have live updates of the themes.
Oh, do I? I do pay...
For Hotmail?
I do pay for Hotmail Plus.
That's probably why you don't. So you don't see ads on your front page then?
No, I don't.
Of Windows, that's
that
why.
You know what? Maybe I could log in with a different account though.
You should, because she's kind of cute.
Okay.
So, I like the themes. The themes are really good. They're really cool.
Yeah, the themes are pretty nice. I'd like to see more of them, and I'd also like to see the ability for you to add themes, to make your own themes.
Well, there's a more themes link that looks like it might take you to kind of a marketplace at some point, and the dynamic themes, those change. Those are like the Google themes that change with the weather, right?
That's right.
They have a little curly, page.
I'm trying to see. I have I have four linked accounts here, and none of them are showing. So
you pay. Well, they know it's Therat. Oh, we're not going to make him see ads.
Well, No, I mean, I've seen ads on these things. I just don't see them today. I don't know why. I don't know.
This is cool. I have to say, I will be using more of this. You know me. I'm a big... I join all the Web 2.0 services.
Sure.
And I find it very interesting to see Microsoft jumping in. They were smart. They waited to see, whether it took, how it worked. And now they're in there. And boy, when they go in, they go. That's why I very well remember. In fact, I remember it because Mark Andreessen was so mad at me when Internet Explorer 3 came out, saying, "Give it up, Netscape. Microsoft's here."
Right.
And once Microsoft really moves into something, it's hard to compete against them.
I feel that way about VMware and the virtualization stuff. I know I'll hear from people who disagree, but I don't know why they it's like they didn't do anything about it, and now Microsoft's there, and now what?
And there's games too, right? Are the games part of this, or is that?
No, so there's a separate program called Games for Windows Live. This came out about a year and a half ago, the initial version. It was terrible. And what that was really was an attempt to get the Xbox Live experience working on Windows. And unfortunately, the initial version, what Microsoft, I think, kind of forgot was that people don't pay to play games online on Windows. You know, every game comes with its own way to get online and play against other people. And Microsoft was trying to basically get people to sign up for an Xbox Live account. And they were giving you a dashboard that looked sort of like the Xbox did at the time, but it was pretty horrible. So now they have a new version out. They've gotten rid of the subscription fee. And I think the Games for Windows Live program is a decent idea. You know, there aren't that many games that get this logo, but the ones that do install very easily, work more like an Xbox game than a typical Windows game, where there's a quick install experience where you don't really have to choose any options, and you can actually start playing it while it's installing. You don't have to wait, you know, for an hour or whatever it takes. But the release this week is Games for Windows Live 2.0, and it's just a dashboard of sorts for accessing content online.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's kind of strange about it is you can't really do things like modify your gamer profile or any of that stuff. Oh. Like you can.
So it's not a full interface.
No, it's kind of a
read only.
It's almost like a step back in a way.
Right.
Yeah. But what I'd like to see them do, and what I think they are going to do eventually, is they have these online stores. You know, they have Xbox Live Marketplace, they have Zune Marketplace, and then now, of course, they've got the Microsoft Store, you know, online. I'd like to see them, where it makes sense, integrate these things together so that, you know, if you've got a Zune subscription, for example, you should be able to play that through your Xbox automatically without, you know, in other words, you should be able to browse the Zune Marketplace from your machine, stream some, you know, an album and get into a game and play while accessing music from your subscription. Why can't you do that? You know, and I'm sure there are some licensing and maybe even technical reasons, but I think this is a step down that road where the Zune, on Windows and then on the Xbox, where it makes sense, this stuff will be aggregated across eventually. So, I have to invent, scenarios cause they don't exist yet, but you know, you could buy a TV show on the Zune. Watch it on the Xbox or buy a TV show on the Xbox and watch it on your PC. You know, why can't you do that stuff today? You can't. It's silly because you can, in fact, buy a TV show from both places, but then they don't interoperate in any way. So I think that this client is the first step toward that future. But today, yeah, there's not much there yet. It's pretty, you know, compared to the old one, but I don't know.
It's a step. It's a step.
Yeah, it's a step. I think so.
And you have to be an Xbox user for it to be. I mean, it's not like games besides that.
No, they do have a list of. They have a small list of games that are compatible on Windows.
Okay.
And some of them are things like Gears of War that you've heard of, and then newer games like the James Bond. What's the name of the James Bond?
Quantum of Solace.
Quantum of Solace. There's a PC game that is a Games for Windows Live game. That's out right now. Fallout is another one.
Fallout was fun. I liked that game.
Yeah,
but you have to buy the PC game, and this is just so it's really okay. I get it. It's just it's an interface to Live.
Yes, and they have achievements. You know, if you're into the achievement stuff on the Xbox 360, these games also have achievements. So those things will all be applied to a common account. You know, so they go to your total and so forth. So
okay, cool.
Yeah, not too bad.
So, holidays are coming. We're going to actually, let's see, next week, just taking a look at the schedule, you're going to be in Redmond for next week. Is that right? On the 11th?
I'm flying home on Thursday.
So we'll either do, we already have it scheduled for our live recording, 4:00 Eastern on Friday. I see it right here.
Yeah, we can do that.
And then, maybe if we can, we're going to get you to do some, interviewing while you're in Redmond. And we'll get a holiday show out of that. But we will miss one episode. Well, the day after Christmas, we're not gonna.
Okay.
Boxing Day.
I'll be playing Call of Duty.
Paul's got to be playing Call of Duty.
So I got a thing.
If you feel like it, you could just hook up a microphone while you're playing Call of Duty. And we'll
you
put
can listen to me trash talk while I play Call of Duty.
An hour of Paul's trash talk. It's a special festive holiday edition of Windows
Weekly.
An hour
of Paul saying your face.
I teabag you. Yeah, no, I think that probably we won't do that. It's as festive and merry-making as that might be.
Okay.
We'll pass. So we'll take a week off the day after Christmas, but we will have an episode for you on the 19th, I think. if Paul records enough good stuff.
I think I already have ideas for this.
Good.
I think it's going to
work. Good. That'd be great. And we could do some interviews, whatever you want to do. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
Now, one of the things we have been doing, and we've got a couple more weeks before the big day.
Yes.
Is talking about some holiday gift ideas for the gadget hound in your life. Why don't you go ahead, Paul, and I'll do some too if you want.
Sure. Please do. I wanted to talk about photo gifts this time.
Oh, yeah. This
is something I do every year within my own family. I mean, these aren't gifts necessarily, but one thing I do every Christmas is we change all the pictures that are hanging around the den.
That's a good tradition.
Yeah, I pick photos. Yeah, I do it specifically for Christmas, and I look back on the previous year and find the best pictures. Print those.
You always have this year's pictures on the wall.
Yeah. Last year's pictures, I guess.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
As we're getting now into December, the pictures on the wall are many of them are kind of old now because they're from, you know, mid to early 2007.
Right.
So they've been there for a while. So, you know, I think when you look out over the realm of photo gifts, you know, some of the things that I do fairly frequently is I also make a photo calendar every year. For the family, that, you know, hangs in our kitchen. Same deal, you know, each month is pictures from the month from the year before, right? We make photo books from all of our trips, which are pretty decent. But, you know, I think when you think about doing things on a computer, obviously, there's software you can deal with. And I would say that for individuals, if you're looking for things for yourself, you should look at things like Windows Live Photo Gallery and Google Picasa and some of the free stuff. But if you're looking for gifts, you know, software like Photoshop Elements, I think they're up there, version 7 is excellent. Believe it or not, I actually use Photoshop Elements instead of the full version of Photoshop.
Hmm.
I have never run into a circumstance where, because I use it mostly for web things that end up on the web, you know. And the thing that's nice about Photoshop is you can batch, you know, things like you want to resize a bunch of pictures so they fit certain dimensions. You can batch them up. It rotates them very quickly, and then you can post them up to the web very easily. Photoshop is great for that kind of stuff. And that's under $100. It's not expensive. If you know people with the Mac, obviously the latest version of iLife is always appreciated. iLife is fantastic stuff as well. But, you know, one of the things that's interesting about the photo stuff is obviously cameras are expensive. You know, scanners can be expensive. And those aren't necessarily the types of gifts you want to give to other people, unless you are the techie guy and, you know, maybe your wife needs a camera or something like that. But, you know, there are so many things that you can buy around photos that would just be valuable to people. If you know people who use a certain photo storage service, for example, you can buy a gift certificate. You know, photo paper is always appreciated. I mean, these things sound stupid, but, you know, ink or whatever. I mean, this is stuff that people will always need. But
I don't think they sound stupid at all, and it really solves... It's tough to pick something for a geek, but if you know they have this printer or they have this kind of camera, these are great gifts that are always welcome.
There's so much stuff, you know, memory for a camera, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So
I just bought.
It's not just the camera scanner; it's all the stuff.
And this is the stuff that you never get enough of that you wish somebody would give you. I just bought 3 16-gigabyte Kingston cards for what I'm hoping will be my Christmas present, my birthday present myself, the Canon 5D Mark II, and it shoots video, so I knew I'd need a lot more memory. But I was surprised. This is good. This is Kingston Elite Pro 133X, so it's, you know, it's very fast.
Right.
3 16 gig cards for under $100.
Sure. That's crazy.
It's mind blowing.
And it's funny because so many people still have those old, you know, 512 meg cards or
forget
whatever.
Forget it.
And you couldn't even give one of those away.
No.
And to replace something like that with something that has a decent amount of memory.
It's a big difference. It really is.
It's a huge difference, and it costs nothing.
When I went to Tasmania, I had a 4 gig card, 1/4 this size. I had 2 of them. And, you know, every day I'd offload them so that I had enough. But that was plenty. Now I have 3 16-gig cards.
Yeah, it's ludicrous.
I'm ready to shoot. I'm going to shoot some high-def 1080p video as soon as the camera comes, which I don't know if it's going to come in time for my trip, but I'm hoping it does. Yo, I agree with you. Accessories. Don't forget the accessories. I would add something.
That's really valuable.
I bet you Xbox has a gift card. I know iTunes has a gift card.
Yes, you can buy cards that have points on them and also cards for the subscriptions.
Those are great stocking stuffers.
especially for a kid. You know, if there's a kid who has an Xbox 360 and they want to play online and, you know, compete against their buddies and stuff, you know, that's something they can't afford themselves, $50, $60, $70, whatever it is. And it's something that you can buy for them. And that's a year of gaming right there.
Right. No, it's it's huge. Those things, I give my kids, because I want to encourage my kids not to down, you know, they know about LimeWire, they know about downloading songs. And I really say, don't do that, please. It's stealing. So what I do is I give them an allowance on iTunes every month. And then at the holidays, I'll give them a $25 iTunes gift card in their stocking. That's 25 songs.
You don't want to just go to Best Buy and buy them a cassette of an album that you think they might like?
You know, you mock me. My daughter...
No, I witnessed this.
Here's a cassette,
honey. I was in line
at
the Best Buy, and I swear to you, a grandmother turned to me and said, do you think a 16-year-old girl would like this? And I said, you've got to be kidding me.
A cassette?
I'm just looking at it. Is this like a candid camera moment? What is this?
That's called a generation gap.
Oh, that's
wow.
More than a gap.
Cassette. Aren't cassettes the latest thing?
Yeah, they sure are.
Yeah.
Good luck
with that. I know I shouldn't give her an 8-track, but a cassette, that's pretty modern, isn't it?
Aww. I think I said to her, you know, if you just bought her a gift certificate, she could, you know.
That's the best thing. Don't choose music. But that's an example. You know, you don't want to choose a camera for a geek because they want to choose it, or a computer. But you can always give them memory. You can always give them print, you know, print materials.
So Lexus commercials. You ever see those commercials where the guy buys his wife a car?
No, I mean,
you know,
them.
One of those things.
Yeah.
All right. So they have, you know, I don't know who these people are, right? I couldn't even imagine being in this tax bracket, but I can tell you that if I ever was in that tax bracket, my wife bought me a car.
Yeah,
I'd
really.
Probably be kind of upset about it.
Yeah. No, don't choose the car for me. I will choose the car.
Thanks for the thought, but
yeah.
You know, I kind of.
I don't really want to drive a pink car, honey.
Yeah, thanks for the cassette drive in there, but I was looking for more of an iPod connectivity.
There's certain things. Now, I think along these lines, another great gift for geeks is cabling, believe it or not. I know this sounds so weird, but we all love, you know, well, I'll give you an example. HDMI cables. Now, this is where I go to get my cables. It's a very affordable site, monoprice.com. Do you know about them?
No, but let me, so tell me how cheap they are, because I have gotten HDMI cable so cheaply, it's almost laughable.
They shouldn't be expensive, and yet if you go somewhere...
But at Best Buy, those things are, depending on which section of the store, $70, $80, $90, $125.
Absurd.
Yeah, I've gotten them on Amazon for, I want to say they were $6.99 a piece.
That's more like it, yeah.
You know?
I find Monoprice sells really good cables. We bought, because we went to gigabit networking, we bought... I think a box of Cat 6 cable, and we just cut and crimp our own cables because Colleen's really good at that. Let me find the HDMI prices. But these are really good cables, HDMI video cables. Oh, wait a minute. You want to get 1.3, by the way. There's a little tip for you. Get the latest ones. They're a little more expensive because it's 1.3. You can, let's see, male-to-male cables. You can either get the professional certified for $30 or get the premium for $5.87.
Now what is tell me the site again.
Mono, you're gonna love it. It is monoprice.com, any kind of cabling, and it is always kind of among the, you know, the lowest prices, but it's really good quality stuff. Now choosing a cable for a geek may be going a little bit far. But if you know what they have, for instance, you've got a high-def TV and they're using the composite cables to hook up the Xbox 360, you might want to get them the HDMI adapter for that. That's a nice
Or a Wii, because they would never notice the difference.
Yeah, right. If they haven't noticed it yet, maybe save the money and get them a Wii.
Allow me to introduce you to 1080p.
Another great company that makes a lot of good accessories is Belkin. And I'll tell you what I really want, but I'm not recommending this for a gift. They do make, we just talked about it on the Gizwiz. Belkin makes great KVMs. They make now a new very affordable KVM called the Flip. It's a two computer KVM, but if you know somebody who has two computers and has two sets of monitors and keyboards, you just use one keyboard, mouse, and a monitor with two computers, and the Flip is really simple, and it's about $50. It's a very nice KVM switch. But I was going to recommend, this is kind of more expensive. It's like $1,500. I really want this, though. They make, for home theater,
yep.
They make something called the Flywire. Do you know about this? Oh, I want the Flywire. It eliminates the HDMI cabling completely.
Really?
Yeah. So you have your TV. See, my problem is my TV's in one part of the room and all the stuff, the cable box, everything in the other part of the room. I'm facing the idea of stringing cables across the room. That sounds no good. This does it wirelessly. It doesn't use, you know, Wi-Fi. It uses its own.
Well, yeah. I mean, it couldn't. I would imagine.
No, it's not fast enough. They say sufficient for 1080p true cinema resolutions, HDCP compliant. You have an infrared remote, so you don't even have to get up to change inputs. This is brand new, but it's $1,500. But man, I want this bad.
That is really expensive.
Yeah, I wish it weren't so expensive, but I can see why. I mean, so you have a little transmitter or a little receiver put on the TV.
Puts whatever.
Yeah, you put it on the TV, and then everything else is somewhere else, and there's the only wire going to your TV is a plug.
Oh, that's the other end of the transmitter. Yeah.
So you get the set-top boxes, Wii's, PS3's, Xboxes, DVD players, Blu-ray players. It works with my cable box because it's HDMI. I really like this, but I can't afford it. Anyway, I thought I'd bring up one really expensive thing. Since I showed you how to save money on cables, now you can take that money you've saved
and spend it on yourself.
Spend it on yourself.
There you go.
All right, let's take a break. We come back. We're going to get your tip of the week for Vista, straight from Windows Vista Secrets, your hot new book. And we're going to get your software pick of the week. But first, it's time for our Audible pick of the week. Our good friends at Audible support the show with their advertising dollars. We love them. We like to support them with our consumer dollars. And, you know, it's a great deal. Audible provides audiobooks of, you know, all sorts of subjects, 51,000 titles. If you go to audible.com/windows, you can audible.com/windows. You can get your first book free. It's a good way to try out. To see whether, you know, this is right for you. I think you're going to love it. If you're listening to a podcast, you're already kind of halfway there. You obviously like listening to stuff in the car or when you're working out or in the garden. I've got a great recommendation for you this week, too. I think you're going to, even you, Paul, will want to run out and get this.
Okay.
ENIAC, The Triumphs and Tragedies of the World's First Computer by Scott McCartney. ENIAC was built for World War II. In 1941, by Eckert and Mauchly. ENIAC stands for the Electronic Numerical Integrator and Computer. It was based on vacuum tubes, 30 tons, 18,000 vacuum tubes, miles of wiring, but it was the first real computer. John Mauchly and Presper Eckert built it. And the story of ENIAC is fantastic. It's amazing. This is based on interviews with the surviving participants and based on Mauchly and Eckert's personal papers. So the story of ENIAC is fascinating, and this book tells it all. I'll play you a little bit just so you can hear what the book sounds like. This is from ENIAC, The Triumphs and Tragedies of the World's First Computer.
I think this machine understands that it's time to think. Indeed, computers have progressed to the point where they can be taught to understand the unspoken machinations of the chess match, where they can think faster and better than humans can. To many, Kasparov's loss was a seminal event.
This is from the foreword, and of course he's talking about current-day computers. But let me tell you, it all started in 1941 with ENIAC. The Triumphs and Tragedies.
Does it play Call of Duty?
Well, no. But you know,
I guess it was made for the real Call of Duty.
It was made for actual World War II. And it was used, I believe, I think one of the purposes of it was to calculate artillery trajectories and things like that. Mm-hmm. So in a way, this predates, it's funny, you know, this is what we were talking about. The advances that have been made, I mean, 1941 sounds like a long time ago, 67 years ago, it wasn't that long ago.
Right.
It's in the lifetime of your grandparents. And that's basically, this is the first computer, 67 years ago. Amazing story. I read this book in paper, and I'm gonna get the audio version of it. I can't wait to hear it. It could be your first audiobook if you just go to audible.com/windows. 51,000 titles, thrillers, sci-fi, business, self-help, fiction and nonfiction. I do a lot. I read a lot of history. I feel like I've gotten a college education listening to Audible books. I'm a big fan. I know you will be too. AUDIBLE.com/windows. Give them a try today. We thank Audible so much for supporting Windows Weekly. They really are fans of the show, and we are fans of Audible.com. All right, Paul, it's time for a Wista peek.
So actually, well, this isn't even really a Vista tip, and it's been detuned somewhat. Somebody at work actually wrote me the other day and said, hey, I need to get a copy of Office inexpensively. You know, how cheaply can I get this? And I was thinking, well, you know, the Office student and teacher version is about $125 to $150 typically at retail.
Mm-hmm.
Surely you can get this less expensively. And at the time, it was actually $69.99 at Newegg.com. And just
what?
Before I sent you, it was just $70. And I.
But you have to be a student.
No, actually, now you just have to be a home user.
It's just the home version. But it's,
and it's on different versions. It doesn't have Outlook. Missing Outlook.
It's missing Outlook.
But still, you know.
That's amazing.
It's a pretty good deal. It's unfortunately the price has gone up somewhat, so now it's up to $90. But I believe this is the cheapest I've seen it on the web. So it's too bad it didn't stay that price, but because $70 is ludicrous, but $90 is still very good. If you were to go into Best Buy today, I bet this thing would cost about $140 or whatever. So
that is truly incredible.
Kind of an interesting deal there.
Highly recommended. I mean, you know. Outlook, you know, truth is you can often get Outlook in a variety of ways. I know
that's true.
I know we get Outlook because we've moved to a hosted Exchange server, which by the way, I love.
I just got it the same way, actually. That's interesting. And, who are you using?
DSL Extreme has a part, it has a business, they call it DNA, I think.
Okay.
And so they host it. You get SharePoint, get Exchange. I'm just thrilled about this. Of course, you get webmail, Outlook webmail.
Do you know?
Say again?
You get mobile access?
Yep.
So they've given you the client. It's not just web-based. You get Outlook.
We get the whole thing and you get BIS. You get the BlackBerry information server. So this is like a revolution for us.
Sure.
And I did not want to run my own Exchange server.
No, it does. I was just... Actually, the briefing I had was with a company that does... managing of local Exchange servers, because a lot of companies can't go to a hosted solution for whatever reason. You know,
for HIPAA or whatever. Yeah.
So they have to have it on site, but what they don't want to do is pay a bunch of people to manage this thing, because Exchange is really complex. And basically what this company does is they come in, they set you up, and then they just monitor it remotely, and they do it for you. And it gives you the kind of best of both worlds. So you have it has to be on site, but now you don't have to deal with it.
Yeah, I feel like this is going to kind of change our whole. SharePoint's cool too. You also get a wiki.
Yep.
I'm really kind of. It's called DNA Mail, but it's through DSL Extreme.
Listen to you. You're like a Microsoft guy.
I know.
It's got this thing called SharePoint. Yes. Yes, it does.
Well, you know why I'm excited about this? We've been using Google Docs, so sure. Colleen will come up with a specification for something. She'll put it on Google Docs and share it.
I found Google Docs to be disappointing, and maybe not for the reasons that people might think, but there is a limit on the amount of data that those documents can hold. So when I was working on the book, the last version of the book, I wanted to back it up online in different places. So I put it up in Office Live, up on Workspace, and I wanted to put them up in Google Docs, but actually it wouldn't accept importing a lot of my documents because they were just too big.
Exactly.
Really limited.
Exactly. So it's going to change our whole workflow. We can use SharePoint to share the docs. This wiki, you know, I have a wiki that I'm running on our servers, kind of and managing it myself and stuff. This is so much more sophisticated, just in the whole thing. And so, and Exchange, it has this, you know, anti-spam. And is it? Sure. I haven't used Exchange's anti-spam. Is it pretty good spam filtering? You can buy an additional level up. They have a third-party service.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, ideally, you would be doing the spam filtering on, you know, off of the server so that kind of happens before it hits the mailbox.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you can do that. You can buy it.
that's something you can do with Exchange. I mean, that's one of the reasons it's so complex. You know, you can divide it up onto multiple servers, and each of which has its own role.
Right.
So, right. But even outside of that system, you know, the company I talked to today, they were talking about filtering spam before you even hit the edge server.
Right. So well, we use a service called MailRoute.net that is a commercial business enterprise level. And yeah, it's amazing. In fact, they sent me the stats. I haven't seen the stats in a few months. The last time they sent me stats, the Leoville.com address got over 1 million a month spam messages.
Yikes.
99.7, I think, percent of all of our mail was spam. So we get like 30,000 messages a month, real messages a month. And the rest is spam. And so it's exactly right. You don't want that to hit the server. You want it to be gone. You don't. That's 1 million messages a month.
Yeah. Even if it's 90% of that, you know, you get it out of there if you can.
Yeah. So we're filtering out 970,000 messages so they don't even hit the server. And then the other 30,000 we want. And then the server handles that and the filtering.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is kind of scary. Although you saw this, did you see the story that the Washington Post found this one company in San Jose that was kind of sending out spam for a lot of other companies? They wrote an article about it. It was Global Crossing or whoever their connection to the internet was, cut them off. 70% of all the spam went away.
It's like a Stephen Wright joke. You know, I found the guy who was responsible for the events. It was a guy named Eddie.
Yeah. He was, you know? It was him.
It's like one guy.
It was this one company who was sending 70% of spam. Now, I'm sure that the spammers have figured out other people who will provide that service for them. But sure. It just shows you. And it was the Washington Post. It wasn't, you know, that figured this out. Mm-hmm. Come on. Let's be a little more aggressive about this here.
Yeah.
Your software pick of the day.
Yeah, I didn't expect to ever be picking this one, but actually I really like it. Although I haven't been shopping around for a new digital media player. I kind of compared this to Winamp in many ways. There's an open source
Songbird. Are you going to talk about Songbird? Isn't it amazing?
Yeah. And it's based on Mozilla technology. Yep. It uses that rendering engine and so forth. I'm curious if this thing will ever take off, but the thing that put it over the top for me was it supports both the iPod and the Zune.
Yeah.
Perfect. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. I have to say the application itself is a little on the old school side, although since I last looked at it, it has improved dramatically. I mean, I remember looking at one of the beta versions and not being hugely impressed by it. But I think the thing that will put this over the top eventually will be the add-ons, you know, the sort of community support, similar to what's happened with Firefox. And there's already some awesome stuff up there. There's something like Live Tweeter that will, you know, post what you're listening to your Twitter feed, to your Messenger, and to other services. There's a Mac remote control program. So if you have that Apple remote control on a Mac, you can use it to control the application. There are notifications or, you know, add-ons that will add lyrics to songs and, you know, all the metadata, you know, editing you would expect and all that stuff. And it actually is kind of a cool full featured program that I think kind of crosses those barriers on the device side, which is the thing that's really been missing, for the most part. And it's free. And I think that's the big deal. You know, in other words, if you have an iPod and you don't want to use iTunes for some reason, you could use Windows Media
Player.
It
looks just like iTunes.
It does. It could look exactly like iTunes if you add the right skin to it. It's not a bad application. You know, that weird three-column view that they have at the top, which is an option in iTunes.
Right. Are you stuck with that?
Not a huge fan of that. I like the visual views that you get in iTunes and in Windows Media Player and also on the Zune. But again, this thing's open source, right? So it's going to be updated very regularly. It's free. It's cool. It's something definitely to look at. And if you were looking for something, especially if I have a Zunes and iPods and I have some Windows Media devices, this is the only thing I've ever seen out of the box. It works with everything, with no configuration whatsoever. It just works.
Songbird. I agree. In fact, I think the reason I knew that you were using it is I think I saw it on your Wakupa feed.
Oh, they probably, yeah, I have been using it. Yeah.
Exactly. Isn't that, love, we talked about Wakupa a few episodes ago. It's a website that
I look, it came out, it's like Opera, you know, new versions of Opera come out and I look at them and I almost always just dismiss it immediately. Right. And I know that's going to people out.
No, I do too.
I just never see anything there that I like. Although I have to say, on a related note, Opera 10 beta is out now and it actually looks pretty decent. This one, same thing. I sort of expected, okay, I'll install it. I'll look at it.
Right.
I know I'm not going to like it, and I'll just move on.
No, I think they turned the corner on this one. I think you're right.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good, and I did not expect to see that. So, you know, good for them. But check it out, because like I said, it's something that just crosses the lines, and if you have a bunch of different devices especially.
Very good.
It's something to look at, yeah.
GetSongbird.com if you want to get it for free, Mac, as well as Windows, as well as Linux, I think. It's open source.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Paul, we're out of time and out of stories, so it's time to wrap it up next week. So you're going to go, what are you going to Microsoft for? Just meetings or?
Meetings, yeah.
And, but you'll have some great stories, I'm sure, about Windows 7 and other things.
I hope so.
Let's hope it's something you would talk about. Yeah. Don't sign any of those NDA things that they hand out.
You know, I haven't actually gotten an NDA to sign in a long, long time.
Really? They just figure.
Yeah, we've moved to the point now where it's just,
you know, this enough, is
okay, right?
Yeah,
yeah. You know, it's kind
that's
of
nice actually that they have that kind of trust of you.
I don't know if it's just me. I mean, I just think the formal. I remember the day they used to fax these things out, and you'd sign it and mail it back, and it was a very formal process. And it seems like it has become less formal,
right?
You know,
very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. We'll come back with some stories. Without breaking any
And I will, if I get that recorder out,
I'll send you a recorder so you can do
I already have some ideas for
some
that.
Some handheld stuff. That'd be great. And for those who watch us live, as we are usually record the show on the Thursday before we air it at 2 p.m. East Coast time, 11 a.m. Pacific time. We were a little late today. StickM was updating its servers. They're all updated now, so we're back on. And next week, as I mentioned, it will be 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on Friday, the 12th. 12-12 Friday. And we'll do our holiday episode.
Wow.
I'll be Bing Crosby. You could be David Bowie. We'll sing the little drummer boy. It'll be great.
Okay. Paul, sounds like a plan.
We'll see you then, Paul.
See you later.
Thanks for joining us on Windows Weekly.